We'll call the meeting to order. We're going to start without our full quorum. Remember, today on the agenda, we have the bill from Representative Mullery, who will be up first, House File 2070, and then we're having an informational hearing on a bill that I'm bringing forward to you. We won't be taking any action today, but I do have an amendment to it that I want you to have ahead of time so you can look when we do, if we do take it back up for action. And then we'll take Representative Abler's social work bill. So we have three bills, and our first one is Representative Mullery. Welcome to the committee, Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry, did you move the bill already?
I will move your bill, Representative Mullery. House File 2070, and I believe you have a couple of amendments that you want to have. And the motion is to recommend it to be passed and returned to finance. And from there, it will go to workforce development, higher education, and I believe on to other greater places as well.
Madam Chair, we'll start with that. Yes, Madam Chair, if you would, I would like to move, or somebody to move for me, the A1, and I believe, is the A2 amendment corrected?
We're waiting a little bit for a quorum, so let's hold on, but we'll come back to that. You can, these amendments put the bill in the order that the author would like them, so I'm going to assume if you can, members can take out the amendments and look at them, we'll be working from them, but we won't officially adopt them until we have a quorum, which we're getting close to. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, House File 2070 basically reinstates with a few changes, such as Community for Neighborhoods and other small changes to get at some of the problems that are presently happening with all the vacant residential properties, and mostly due to the mortgage foreclosures. And this was a very successful program for the inner cities back in the 1980s, and what we're asking is this program be reinstated. The League of Cities is very strongly supports this, and it had a very good record when it was going, and we hope to get money for it to continue. And it's very important, of course, to my city and your city and to other cities that have been really hit by foreclosures. And I have here Karen Reed to speak on it, and then Jane Ranieri after that.
Welcome to the ministry. You introduce yourself, please.
Oh, I'm Karen Reed. I'm the Executive Director of Neighborhood Development Alliance. The Neighborhood Development Alliance has been around for 20 years now, and we use URAP, now the targeted, I don't even know what it says, I just use it as URAP, to do quite extensive redevelopment of an intersection and adjoining blocks for the St. Paul's West Side. I provided before and after pictures for you to see. Sometimes my testimony in print. Our project was a combination of residential and commercial in an area that's like most of older parts of St. Paul and cities around Minnesota, is that the commercial and the residential is sort of cheek to jowl, and we liked the program then because you could address multiple uses from multiple sources. The state funding leveraged federal funding, CDBG, it leveraged city funding, and it leveraged private dollars from now Wells Fargo Bank. And what we did was, it was about a $2 million program. It was done in two phases in the early 90s. We took and relocated some people in residential homes and in two small businesses. The biggest one was the redevelopment of what is now Wabasha Center. It was an auto repair place. We turned it into a child care center that's run and owned by St. Matthew's Church across the street, so it is a non-denominational child care center. And they were our partners on that. And in the first floor is Neighborhood Development Alliance offices, where we do primarily right now foreclosure prevention counseling for free in the Seven County metro area. We also did 11 units of affordable rental housing and with tax credits also in that mix. And we also provided home ownership opportunities by rehabbing surrounding houses in the area to sell to moderate income families. And since that time, NIDA has been serving the community and the metro area in counseling, homeowner rehab. The child care center has been doing from infants to toddlers to daycare for the community around. It's been, for a while, the only licensed daycare center on the west side. This has been a great program for us, and we would like to see it revitalize the program so we can continue to revitalize areas around, especially along transportation corridors. So we are right now investing some funds, and our partner organization, Riverview Economic Development Association, is purchasing commercial, and we are purchasing housing to do a comprehensive redevelopment in specific areas on the west side.
Thanks very much. Professor Mullery, we have a quorum now, so we can adopt the two amendments if you'd like. So I'll move the A1 amendment first. This puts the bill in the order that the author would like. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. And the second is the A2 amendment. Again, puts the bill in the order that the author would like. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails, and your 2 minutes are on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And next will be Gene Ranieri from Minneapolis, and he can explain some of the history and how it was used.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, my name is Gene Ranieri. I am the IGR Director for the City of Minneapolis, and I think prior folks have talked about this was established in 1989. I guess I will be the historian on this. I was here then, and Representative Clark, you were also here on this project. And I remember taking tours with folks around the cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and also in Duluth. How this program all started was that Governor Perfect at the time was concerned that the cities of Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth, and later other cities were added, that there was a concern that there was deterioration in the cities, there was need for employment, there was need for jobs, there was need for housing and economic development. So a program was developed. It was based on collective efforts of legislators, cities, and basically state funds were made available for cities to identify certain neighborhoods, so it was targeted. It was targeted by census tract, included neighborhoods in the city of Minneapolis on the south side and the north side, and the funds could be used for housing, but also for business development. There were some business nodes developed along Franklin, Minneapolis, on the west side of St. Paul, on Wright Street in St. Paul, on the west end of Duluth. It also provided that money could be leveraged. The federal funds were also used in local funds. There was also a requirement, and there was also a component that allowed cities to use a portion of the funds for job training, health care, daycare centers, things of that nature. Because it was thought at the time, and I think still today, that not only do you do bricks and mortar, but to help a neighborhood get revitalized, you need to do the other things too. The most important things, job training, daycare, family stabilization. So this program lasted for 2 years. Unfortunately, came a budget crisis in 1991, and the language laid on the books, but there was no appropriation. Since then, there have been some attempts to make this a program that's more than just in the cities of the first class, to make it available to communities who are also showing stress, inner-ring suburbs, some of the cities in greater Minnesota. This bill would help the city of Minneapolis. We have at least last year 2,900 foreclosed properties, 2,800 the year before. They're concentrated on Representative Mulway's district and seeing growing numbers on the south side and Representative Clark's district and others. So this program would help us with that, and it would be a very help to all cities throughout the state who could qualify. And with that, I'll stop and try and answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for either of the witnesses? Governor Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so I guess what I'm looking at is this a $30 million program, Representative Mulery?
I'm sure Madam Chair
represents,
yes, it would be 39, and that's from D, so that's why it goes to Rukavina's committee now.
Madam Chair, yeah, follow-up questions, if I could. So the $30 million goes into a revolving fund, that then these monies are paid back and it's used on subsequent projects?
Madam Chair and Representative Stevenson, yes, it would be used that way. And this, by the way, as you probably see, expands it to cities all over the state that are facing these foreclosure problems. So it would be used to rotates, because obviously that isn't going to solve all of the problems that are from foreclosure. That wouldn't even probably even be enough for one neighborhood. But it'll be, you know, we're trying to get anything we can. If we had you take a tour, there's certain places, for instance, I was told by the housing director for St. Paul that on the east side, there, like she said, there's strips that she's driven down the street, and for three blocks, every house has been boarded up on each side. In Minneapolis, I know for a fact that in certain neighborhoods on the north side, we will have blocks where half of the houses are knocked down already, foreclosed properties, and another half of the standing ones are boarded up. So we're kind of under siege from this, and trying to get anything we can to try and help with that.
Representative Stevenson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And I guess I'm kind of questioning, because I know there's monies in the federal stimulus package. Have those been looked at in terms of the funding for this particular project?
Madam Chair and Representative Severson, yes, but they certainly don't go to... Anything we can get is helpful, but that certainly doesn't meet the needs.
And...
Representative Severson?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, it's okay. I'd like to try and expand on the answer to Representative Severson about stimulus. In July, the Housing Recovery Act was passed, and there was the Neighborhood Stabilization Program was part of that act. Under that act, certain communities were designated, received funding directly from the federal government. We had to go through an application process. Minneapolis was one. I think there were like 60, many cities in the state. Excuse me. I think several cities in the metropolitan area, some counties, and I think some cities in greater Minnesota. We had seen that happen again, and there would be an application process where Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, like you did on the first bill, would be able to move money throughout the state. Unfortunately, under the stimulus package that was passed in February, it is now a competitive grant program and not an entitlement or a direct grant to cities who have a lot of foreclosures. So our city and other cities would have to apply for funding to the federal government under the current stimulus program. So it's a little different than what it was in August.
Okay. And just one more follow-up. You gave the testimony that in 1990, this was instituted in 89 in Duluth, Minneapolis, and St. Paul. In 91, we hit a budget crunch, and so the program was discontinued. I'm just kind of curious as to how big the budget crunch was then, and how big is the budget crunch now that we're facing with a $6.4 billion budget shortfall, and why we would take this on board when back then we discontinued the program in 91.
Madam Chair, Representative Pearson, I don't remember the exact numbers, but today I think what's compounding the budget crunch is the fact that we have a housing crisis, foreclosures throughout the state, and I think that compounds the issue, and I think makes the need for this program to be at least discussed and possibly, hopefully, enacted by the legislature. The 91 crisis, I forget what the numbers were, but we didn't have the housing crisis we have today, or I don't think the unemployment was near 8.3% either.
Okay. That's it for now.
Okay, Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Mullery, just want to clarify, we're passing this bill to finance. Eventually, it's going to end up in Representative Rukavina's committee. The $30 million appropriation, if it is to be funded, that will be a decision of Representative Rukavina's committee based on their target and their priorities, and this will not count against our accounts, correct?
Representative Morgan, you're correct.
Thank you, Representative Morgan.
One other question, or a comment, I would say. I noticed with the A2 amendment, we've added a tax increment financing district onto this bill. I wish you good luck with our tax chair.
Representative Mullen, maybe you want to explain. It's not a news.
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, I've been on the tax committee a long time with her, and I know her well, and she sometimes does agree with me on TIF districts, so I actually think we will hopefully succeed with her on this.
Okay. Do you want to explain that amendment any further, Representative Morgan?
Oh, Madam Chair and Representative Morgan, it's clarifying some language in last year's bill that would allow the funds to be used back for neighborhood purposes. A little larger. It's for the same purposes that our NRP program was used for 20 years.
Is Representative Mullery, if I may add, I think there was a question by our own staff upstairs whether or not we were able to do that. So it's more clarification than anything. Oops, that's over there. Representative Morgan.
Madam Chair, I thank you for the explanation. I wasn't really looking for an explanation. I was just going for the easy joke. So thank you.
Can I use that? Okay, is there any further discussion on Representative Mullery's bill? Any opposition? If not, the bill is before us as amended and will be re-referred. It's recommended to pass it, and it'll be returned to finance for its journey on the rest of the way.
Oh, did you say, I think it goes first to finance.
That's what I said.
Oh, yeah.
It's recommended to pass and be returned to finance.
Okay.
Recommended as amended. I'm going to get this exactly right. Recommended to pass as amended and to return to finance. Okay. I want to make sure that's absolutely correct. And we know it has several other stops to make. So, all those in favor of the motion before us indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no.
No.
Motion prevails, and the amendment
and the
bill is on its way. As amended. Thank you. Representative Lane, will you take over the chair?
So next we have before us an informational hearing on House File 1993.
I'm going to ask Laura Music to start as one of our witnesses to come forward to join me here at the table. Let me just tell members, I'm offering this bill, House File 1993. We won't be taking any action on it today, but I have included in the packet an amendment that I would like to explain too. And I want to say that this, the reason we're having an informational hearing at this point is that the information on this issue is still something we're gathering. We want to make sure that we have really good science-based evidence before we take action on this. And we're gathering that. We haven't had enough time to do all of that. But we may later, I'm not sure. We're going to present to you the best information we have today, Madam Chair and members, and have a discussion about this. I bring you this bill, which basically says that the utility providing our gas, telephone, and phone services cannot install a utility pole in the city of Minneapolis if it's treated with pentachlorophenol. And the amendment, basically, which is titled the A2, which, again, we're not putting on, but we will put it on if we have to take action on this, not today, but another time, says that it describes what PCP is, a manufactured chemical characterized by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency as a probable human carcinogen. And then secondly, it requires the Commissioner of Health to work with the appropriate local, state, and federal agencies to determine whether the levels of exposure in these neighborhoods where these treated utility poles are being installed exceed the human health risk limits or maximum contaminant levels for the residents and for the utility workers who are handling these. And what I'm hoping that we'll have a chance to do with you today is to help you understand how serious an issue this is, that we are dealing with a pole that's being put up in many parts and has already been put up in many parts of the community and probably way beyond Minneapolis. I started with Minneapolis because this came to me from a Minneapolis neighborhood. One of the things you might want to think about later is making this broader, you know, statewide or whatever. But today, I'm starting with that because that's where my evidence begins. And we have a situation where neighbors have been very, very concerned and are looking to state government to figure out how we can help protect them from a toxic exposure that's right in their backyard, right along the alley in many cases. So I'd like to ask first Laura Music to just lay out for us the situation that brought this bill to me and to all of us to consider today.
Welcome to the committee, and please state your name.
I don't know who's talking to me. there. Okay. My name is Laura Music. Thank you, Madam Chair, and everyone. And I'm here to share a story with you that relates to the legislation under consideration. I've never done this before, so I'm a little nervous, so you have to bear with me, please. I'm a proud resident of the Seward neighborhood of South Minneapolis. I'm not a scientist or environmental activist. I'm just a neighbor. Last spring, I noticed a nasty smell in my yard that wouldn't go away. The smell has been described as a giant permanent marker marinated in lighter fluid. It was worse on warm, sunny days. I finally tracked the odor to a new power pole that had been installed in my alley late last winter. XL Energy told me that the traditional cedar poles we're used to seeing around town had become too expensive, so they'd switched to a new, softer wood pole. These new poles are treated top to bottom with a pesticide chemical called pentachlorophenol, and the smell is some kind of diesel fuel that the penta is dissolved in. I asked XL to remove the pole and replace it with a non-stinky one. They refused, saying there was nothing wrong with my pole. My neighbors and I started to avoid being in our yards. We began keeping our windows closed to avoid the odor. I had friends in my backyard ask to go inside to avoid that nasty smell. Penta is nasty stuff. In 1984, the Environmental Protection Agency canceled all indoor residential uses of this chemical after studies showed that it poses significant risks to human health and is a probable human carcinogen. The EPA has licensed the chemical for use in commercial industrial settings only. One of the few very limited uses for penta exempted from EPA's total ban is its use as a pesticide treatment for power poles, which is why we're here today. A byproduct contained in the penta used for power poles is dioxin, which you've probably all heard of. That's one of the most toxic chemicals ever created. Studies have shown significant levels of dioxin measured in soil samples taken from around penta-treated poles. Other studies confirm that inhaling airborne penta is one of the most common routes of exposure. Last fall, the board of the Seward Neighborhood Group organization passed a motion asking XL to remove the penta-treated poles in our neighborhood and replace them with safe alternatives, and that request still stands. In December, the Seward Neighborhood had an open meeting about these poles, and as much as I do appreciate the hard job that XL has to keep us safe and electrified, nothing that I heard from them at the meeting convinced me that I shouldn't still be very concerned about the pole in my alley. There are no hard, comprehensive studies to tell us about the effects of these poles in the dense, urban, residential areas of Minneapolis, despite what you might hear a little later on. A 2008 University of Minnesota Consumer Law Protection Clinic study concluded, and I quote, "The studies and materials summarized in this report indicate that penta may cause substantial harm to humans and the environment, either through contact, groundwater, contamination, or inhalation. There are several reasonable, affordable, and significantly less harmful alternatives available to replace penta-treated utility poles." I'd be happy to make the law clinic study available to you if you're interested.
I think we have.
Okay, that's terrific. Thank you. So there are substantial chilling questions that remain unanswered. For me, this is a quality of life issue, a health issue, an environmental issue, and an economic issue, all rolled into one. And I also worry about the people who handle and install these poles every day. I continue to press XL about removing the pole in my alley and was told that I could have it replaced with a less smelly cedar pole for $1,000, which became $3,000 a few weeks later. I don't have that kind of cash, so the question for me is, does that mean that wealthy people in more wealthy neighborhoods have the option to buy their way out of this problem, but not me? When XL finally offered to replace my alley pole at no charge, I was elated at first, until I discovered that they meant to replace it with another penta-treated pole. So that meant more off-gassing, more toxicity concerns. Meanwhile, my city council person convinced the supplier to offer XL a free test fiberglass pole, which are used in Alaska, by the way, but XL refused. More recently, XL has offered to replace my alley pole with a copper naphthenate-treated alternative, and my neighbor Therese and I are working through the University of Minnesota Consumer Protection Law Clinic to evaluate this latest offer. We very much want to move forward, but since copper nap poles reportedly have a strong odor very similar to penta poles, we do have some reservations. We hope to resolve the matter soon so that we can once again enjoy our backyard when the nice weather finally arrives. There are, I do want to mention that there are other neighbors throughout the city, not just me. Recently we've heard from people in the Powderhorn neighborhood, the Longfellow neighborhood, and now the state, there's someone up in Cass County, north of Brainerd, who are beginning to come forward with complaints about the new pen of poles being installed near their homes. With hundreds of these smelly and possibly dangerous poles scheduled to be installed in Minnesota over the next several months, I hate to think what our neighborhoods will smell like by next year. So I urge you, please, to do something soon to prevent Minnesota's utility companies from imposing these nasty chemicals on our properties and stinking up our precious city and state. There are alternatives. Thanks very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Who else do you have, Representative Clark?
Okay. Mark Sulander? I don't know if there are any questions for this. Not Mark.
Oh.
Okay.
Welcome to the city. State your name.
Good morning. Mark Sulander. I'm also a resident of the Seward neighborhood. To begin, I want to rephrase something that we discussed at our December 4th community meeting with Xcel, a discussion of Xcel's own environmental policy, and I'll just read a brief excerpt of the summary of Xcel's policy. Xcel Energy will pursue environmental excellence and innovation in our corporate strategy and daily operations. We will set a cornerstone of outstanding environmental compliance and build on that foundation to pursue industry-leading initiatives that enhance customer and shareholder value while demonstrating respect for our communities and concern for the environment. We will advance voluntary programs that go beyond current standards of environmental performance, and we will demonstrate environmental leadership. On December 4th, I invited Xcel and still have not had any response whatsoever from Mr. Al Schrock, the engineer in charge, who you will hear from today, Mr. Wilkinson, the lobbyist for the Pencil Council, or the CEO of Xcel, who is directly involved in monitoring the situation. Here's a map of how many people are affected just by one pole in our neighborhood. I know this is difficult to see. I will pass it around. I don't know if we have an overhead. But let's just say you can see the bullseye. The center red circle here is the pole. And you can see concentric circles radiating out from it. And I'll tell you a quick story. Last summer, my neighbor across the street was out of town, and his neighbor smelt what he thought was a natural gas leak. Now, I've got to tell you that the distance from this pole to my neighbor's house, way across the street, it has to go all the way across my 150-foot-long lot, across the street, and to the other house. We're getting close to 200 feet away. He thought there was a natural gas leak. He went over next door and knocked on the door, and luckily someone was home, and they were able to discover that no gas was on, no grill was on. It was this pole. Now, I've gone out on a walking tour of my neighborhood. We have close to 9 or 10 poles just on our block. Xcel, Great River Energy, other utilities in Minnesota have plans to replace every utility pole, including ones close to your homes, all of our homes, with these cheap, softwood, southern pine utility poles. On December 4th, Xcel stated at our meeting that currently they are using an entirely different type of pole in the field. They have well over 400,000 hardwood poles in the field that are hardwood northern red cedar. 85% of their currently installed poles are cedar. They will try to tell you today that they've used these type of poles for years. That is not entirely true. What is different is that these poles are now treated, as Laura indicated, not just the bottom 4 to 6 feet below the ground. These are treated under high pressure. Can you imagine bundling like toothpicks, an entire railroad car full of utility poles, 40 feet long, probably a bundle of 10 or 12, rolled into a huge pressure chamber under steam and high temperature pressure for hours They roll out and they're oozing chemicals. They continue to ooze once they're installed. And if we had an overhead, you could see the ooze coming off the base of this pole. If I was a shareholder of Xcel, I would be extremely concerned about the liability, not only to the workers of these poles that have to handle this every day, but as Laura indicated, there's a high risk to inhalation of these chemicals. That's one of the most effective ways that these chemicals get into the body. So the type of poles that Xcel is replacing with these cheap alternatives, cutting corners, are gone from a hardwood northern red cedar pole to a softwood southern pine pole that is fully treated stem to stern and every square inch pressure treated, oozing with chemicals. And it's not only fuel or diesel oil that we are smelling, the solvent is volatilizing every chemical, and if we can smell the chemical, we're smelling every part of the dioxin, the penta, and everything that's in it. I think we have a duty at the state of Minnesota to protect our residents. And they will claim that this is EPA registered. That means nothing. They are still liable. The Supreme Court in 2005 in Bates versus Dow AgroSciences ruled that state law and common law actions still apply on liability for damages caused by an EPA registered chemical. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to take them.
Shall we move on with the rest of the testifiers and then have questions?
Okay. Hi, I'm Vinnie Gary. I'm a professor emeritus at the University of Minnesota. I'm a toxicologist and a pathologist. I'm board certified in toxicology. I'm a member of the board of directors of the American Board of Toxicology. Pentachlorophenol has a long history with me and with others. Some time ago, one of my patients came running in the middle of January. And he was sweating, and he had these little petechiae all over his skin. And what he had been doing was that he was dealing with a ponding of penta-treated wood, and he was removing the penta from the pond. And the pipe broke, and he got exposed to penta quite a bit. So penta is one of these things that is semi-volatile, kind of. But more importantly, it has many of the attributes and many of the features that go along with dioxin. It is something that can give you a picture also like all PCBs as well, because it is kind of in the middle in between a PCB and a dioxin. And so when you have contaminants, they can go either way in the penta when you use commercial grade. Fact is that we need to use something of that nature to treat the wood so that the wood will remain intact. That's an unfortunate thing. That's an unfortunate property that we have to deal with. We have penta, we have arsenate, we have copper, we have creosote. Those are the choices we have when we deal with wood. Whether or not we want to continue down this path is the question. There are alternatives that you've heard about. I don't know how viable they are because I wouldn't want to get up on a steel pole in the middle of winter and try to climb it. You know, but I would like to evaluate whether or not some of the other alternatives might actually be viable before we committed to using this penta-treated wood, knowing full well the toxic capabilities of the material. And if you have any questions, I'm open.
Okay, I'm if anybody has any urgent questions, we could do it now. Otherwise, I'm interested in going up forth through the testifiers.
One more testimony,
okay.
Proponent, and then we'll have that right. Audience.
I'll be real brief. My name is Angelina Matias Vasquez.
Welcome.
I'm a resident of the Phillips neighborhood, and I am a member of PESCI, which is the stands for Phillips Environmental steering committee initiative, and what we do there is we have looked at what the environmental impact is of chemicals, and in this map you can see the what it shows is asthma, the asthma cases, and also we have arsenic poisoning, and another thing is the beef, my community, the beef community is populated by people of color for the most part. So also there are a lot of children in our community who are going to be affected. So we this shows the environmental impact, you know, the burden that we are having to deal with at present. And I just want to remind everyone that, you know, we have that now, and if we were to bring those calls into our neighborhood, what that would do to how that would substantially worsen this situation. And we do have a lot of kids in our neighborhood, and we also have the elderly and to think of. So that is just my point. If you could please think about how that's going to impact our health. And we have other environmental issues, such as air quality. It's also really bad in my neighborhood. And so you should keep that in mind when you are looking at these.
Thank you. Anybody have any burning questions for the testifiers so far? All right, let's move into the people who are in opposition to this. Is John Wilkinson here? Okay. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
My name is John Wilkinson. And should I continue with my
yes,
statement?
Yes, please go on.
My name is John Wilkinson, and I'm manager of the KMG Pentachlorophenol Task Force, which was established by the manufacturer of pentachlorophenol, KMG Bernouth, Incorporated, to assist the company in satisfying its obligations under the federal and state pesticide laws to protect human health and the environment. I have worked on the science of pentachlorophenol for over 40 years, in all aspects of the science. I speak in opposition to the House File 1993, which would prohibit the use of pentachlorophenol-treated utility poles in the state of Minnesota. Pentachlorophenol-treated utility poles have been in use for over 70 years. Nearly 50% of some 100 million utility poles in service in the United States are treated with pentachlorophenol. To protect utility poles rot and decay, the poles are placed in a pressure cylinder and a solution of pentachlorophenol and oil is forced into the wood. Pentachlorophenol is regulated and approved for use in treating utility poles by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Extensive health and safety data supports the use of the product. The wood treating industry works hard to develop best and apply best management practices to use pentachlorophenol safely and to reduce the potential for the release of the chemical into the environment. In 2008, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency completed its comprehensive multi-year review of the science involving the use of pentachlorophenol to treat utility poles. Based on its review of the science data, U.S. EPA concluded in 2008 that pentachlorophenol could continue to be used safely in a way that protects human health and the environment. As part of its scientific review process, the U.S. EPA considered and analyzed some 275 scientific publications and studies on pentachlorophenol. The science included numerous state-of-the-art studies submitted by KMG under the rigorous data requirements of the federal pesticide laws, as well as the independent work done in universities and other researchers, the University of Michigan specifically. The US EPA reviewed all of the science data, the scientific data, and performed an assessment of the potential impacts of pentachlorophenol-treated utility poles on human health and the environment. The exposure potential issue was evaluated by the US EPA under nearly every conceivable scenario, including exposures of workers who treat poles, of utility linemen who climb poles, and of children that may play near poles. Exposure was considered from different routes as well, including exposure from touching treated wood and exposure from air. Specifically with regard to the potential of health effects for children, the US EPA looked at both population-based biological monitoring data from the National Health and Nutritional Surveys and other federal and state data on potential exposure of children to a wide variety of pollutants. The US EPA also extensively reviewed groundwater and surface water issues. As for exposure from utility poles treated with pentachlorophenol, US EPA agreed that pentachlorophenol is largely found in the wood. Studies have shown that the odor sometimes associated with utility poles is usually temporary and comes from the solvent and oil used to create the treating solution. Pentachlorophenol itself is virtually odorless at ambient temperatures. The EPA process was an open one, with many opportunities for the public participation and comment. After considering all the data, as well as the comments from the public, the US EPA concluded that pentachlorophenol meets the exacting legal standards for continued use as a treatment of wooden utility poles. At the end of all of its considered and thorough examination, which was 20 years, of the use and science of pentachlorophenol, the US EPA concluded that it was appropriate for pentachlorophenol to continue to be used. In light of the well-informed decisions by both US EPA and Minnesota Department of Agriculture to allow the use of pentachlorophenol-treated utility poles, I urge this committee to reject House File 1993. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any burning questions? All right. Stick by, close by, and we'll have questions later, perhaps. Next, we have Al Schrock.
Madam Chair?
Please state your name for the record.
My name is Alan Schrock. I'm a 29-year employee. This is also my first time testifying before the group like this at NSC, now Xcel Energy. I'm currently the director of our design and construction for the West Metro area of the Twin Cities. I greatly appreciate the opportunity to address this committee today. I'm here today because of the concerns we have over House File 1993. If passed, this bill will ban the use of utility poles within the city of Minneapolis that are treated with wood preservatives, pentachlorophenol, commonly referred to as penta. Xcel Energy is concerned that this bill will primarily add costs to our customers and pose an unnecessary risk to the public and the linemen who have to climb our poles to maintain reliable electric services. Penta-treated utility poles have been in the utility industry, standard for years, and NSP standard pole for more than 70 years. It is the pole of choice in the utility industry, with 57% of in-service utility poles being penta-treated per a 2001 Utility Solid Waste Activities Group survey of 383 utilities. As Laura mentioned, this probably all stems from the reason why I'm here today, a single stinky pole installed in the Seward community behind her house about a year ago. We believe this pole was an anomaly, and we are currently working with her and her neighbors, actually her attorneys, on the replacement of this pole. Experts have told us that it does not smell like a typical penta-treated pole. In fact, penta is odorless. You can't smell penta. It's the fuel oil, the treating oil. The manufacturer, when they impregnate the pole with the penta preservative, has to mix penta with a carrier oil, a solvent, to achieve a 6 to 8% penta solution measured by weight. If the pole smells, it's going to be the solvent or the oil. In fact, just to clarify a question we are that was brought up earlier, we talked about, we have an RFP, a request for proposal out there right now to look at other utility poles out there. This was processed before this incident even came about, where we also invited the vendors to look at other alternative poles as well. We're currently in the process of reviewing those RFPs. And in fact, one of the vendors, or the two vendors that are our finalists, the one of the guys who is leading, chairing this committee, has two samples of the penta-treated poles in his office, and he can't smell a thing with them. So I just wanted to bring that up. Maybe it's the manufacturer. I'm not qualified to make that determination, but the current vendor that we're looking for down the road, there's no odor from those sections that he has in his office. In a recent request for proposal, like I talked about, a penta southern pine pole was found to be the least costly pole treatment alternative for us, which is what we're looking at. Therefore, if we are forced to switch to an alternative treatment such as copper chromate arsenate, creosote, or copper naphthenate, our cost and pole price will go up approximately 15 to 20%. We install an estimated 6,000 poles per year in NFC Minnesota, 20,000 poles company-wide, so the impact in pole price is not insignificant by itself, approximately $80,000 to $900,000 annually. The bigger cost impact, however, would be the new processes or checks and balances that we will have to put into place to make sure no penta-treated pole is installed in Minneapolis. In just the Metro West area alone, we serve 73 communities. When a storm comes through, we pull together and bring into the storm-damaged area as many crews as we can justify to restore power as quickly as reasonably possible. This means we need to manage the new material and processes that will be unique to Minneapolis. I have 5 service centers, 5 warehouses in the Metro West area where I have employees that might need to work in concert with our Minneapolis service center to restore power to that city and the nearby suburbs. Just makes it be very difficult to manage that. Minneapolis is just one of the communities we do work in on a daily basis throughout NFC Minnesota. We have 379 communities that we serve electrical service to. What if all these communities requested a pole treatment of their choice? This is why we become extremely concerned over a policy that forces us to provide a material and work practice that can be costly and difficult to manage with no apparent benefit to one specific area. Our industry has used treated wood poles for years. Several new treatment options have been developed, but do not have the track record and are more expensive. Several alternative non-wood pole options exist that have their applications, but the comprehensive studies we have reviewed indicate clearly treated wood remains the most functional and cost-effective material for use by electric utilities. We install poles in a wide variety of locations. Some of those locations are accessible, as you can imagine, by vehicle, and some are not. Our employees at time must climb these poles with the aid of leg gaffs that stick, basically allow them to climb the wood pole to access our equipment. We have to work on these poles under many adverse conditions, especially considering our Minnesota climate. Reliability of service and employee safety is paramount in our final choice of pole type and treatment. A non-treated wood pole will have to be replaced more often. A non-treated wood pole will have to be replaced more often, inconveniencing our customers and increasing our cost to our customers. It also increases the chance of a pole failure, leading to potential outages and possible property damage. Couple other things I wanted to bring up. The mention of a fiberglass pole that Councilman Gordon was able to track down and get for us free. If you can imagine, we want to be the one selecting the poles and make sure that they're tested and that they meet our standards. It was a generous offer on his part, but our RFP is going to be looking at any pole alternative that might be out there, and so we want to look at that ourselves through our process and not just pull one that we don't know anything about and put it out there.
Maybe we can move now to one question we have here, and then we'll do the final testifier.
Sure, thank you.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Schrock, first question is, has Xcel done any studies? We've heard testimony here about the possible leaching of the chemical into the ground and also into the air. Have you done any studies, or do you have access? Do you know if anybody has any studies out there about this chemical's ability to do that from your pool?
Madam Chair.
Yes, please.
No. Xcel Energy, I'm not aware of done any studies specifically, but we belong to organizations such as EPRI, the Electric
Edison.
I should know that. Edison Electric Institute, EEI, EPRI, another organization, U.S. WAG, Youth WAG, Utility Solid Waste Activities Group, and those groups have sponsored studies that we have access to that information.
Okay, Representative Morgan?
Madam Chair, then just to follow up, I would appreciate it if you could provide this committee, members of this committee, with any information regarding that. In addition, if you could provide this committee with the material safety data sheets that your poll workers have on pentachlorophenol, that would be appreciated.
Okay.
All right, thank you. We'll have one final testifier, and then we'll take questions, and we do have another bill to do, so we will try to compact that. Bill Haney, please. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bill Haney. I'm Legislative and Political Director for the IBEW Minnesota State Council. We represent most of the utility workers in the state that have to deal with the polls. We're opposed to the bill. We support the amendment that Representative Clark drafted, and thank her for that. We're opposed to the bill because we're concerned about the alternative. Back whenever Hurricane Katrina was, there was apparently a shortage of poles because so many got wiped out down there. Xcel was using creosoted coated poles, and they were dripping or oozing the chemical, and we had a lot of health issues with members at that point, people getting sick and getting burned, clothing being destroyed by it and other things. So we're concerned about the alternative, what they would use if this was the bill were to pass as it is. That's the extent of my testimony. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And now let's take testimony for about questions for about 5 minutes so that we can move on. Representative Scott?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this might go, well, maybe you could answer this, sir, since you work with those folks. Have you seen any instances with the folks that you represent, the linemen and so forth, have you seen any instances where they've worked with this type of treated wood, this pencil, have you seen incidences of health issues with that specific chemical?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Haney.
Representative, we have not. I sent out an email at the end of last week asking for any information or experience that anybody might have, and haven't gotten back any as of yet. That I didn't get back any no's either, so I don't.
And maybe Mr. Schrock could answer that also.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Schrock, close to the microphone.
I have 108 utility workers that report under my area, and I'm not aware of any issues that's from a health or injury standpoint. They wear gloves when they're working on the poles, which is a requirement for splinters, obviously, and it keeps that chemical away from them. And they also have jumpsuits that they can wear if they feel, you know, kind of their choice, and we'll wash those, take care of those for them to take care of any, you know, laundry that they would have to do.
Okay, Representative Scott?
Yeah, just to follow up to that then, but they're not wearing any covering over their face or mouth, and so they're breathing this in on a daily basis, and you haven't uncovered any particular health issues as a result of that. So people working that closely with it or not.
Mr. Schrock?
That's correct. I'm not aware of it.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, and Representative Bly?
Madam Chair.
Representative Clark?
I just want to point out that we did have testimony from Dr. Vincent Gary about a worker that he did describe what the issue was with that worker, and we need to revisit that again.
Yes, thank you. And Representative Bly?
Well, I have to admit I'm confused. There's really disparate testimony about whether this is a new poll or a poll that's been used a long time. I'm not questioning anyone's veracity. I'm confused because I'm glad we're not voting on this because I'm not really sure how I would vote. I want to be open-minded about it, and I'm looking for more clarity about, you know, is it perhaps that the polls that are smelly weren't aged enough, or I mean, is that at all figure into the placing of these polls? I'm confused, and I'd like to have more. And I know we don't have more time, but you know,
Mr. Schrock, if you could answer that fairly quickly.
Sure. As far as I know, you know, I'm not an expert on that. I basically install the polls, my staff do. But you know, there is a policy. If a dripping poll, we get a dripping poll, or the poll has excess moisture in it, we ship it back to the manufacturer. And you know, why this product smelled the way it did, I don't know that.
Is it a single poll?
No. Right now.
Well, we actually heard a different testimony about that as well. We heard one poll. We heard many polls. So you know, again, I don't know exactly what to think.
All right. Ms. Welsh, I guess we don't have that. Mr. Schrock, you don't know that?
Yes, I could address that if you'd like.
Okay, yes, please.
Just in the city of Minneapolis, we've installed roughly 620 poles within the last year. New poles, pentatated poles, like what are the poll and complaint here. And I've received two other phone calls besides some of the people within the sewer communities that I found as people outside of the community. Regulated those polls. All poll complaints within Xcel Energy have to go through me. We did that a year ago, and I received two complaints over the phone. One was a creosote poll, the other one was a pentatreated poll.
And just for clarification for me, the polls that are the soft southern pine are the ones that are the pentatreated? Mr. Schrock?
All right. We have through the years, as you can imagine, we've gone to different vendors to get different poles. Some of the cedar poles were butt-treated with penta-fluorophenol, just butt-treated, and the top of the pole was not treated with penta. Then there's some that were treated completely with penta, cedar poles, and then there were, you know, the new ones are southern pine poles. Those we started installing about 3 to 4 years ago. We started out with those as creosote, and then because of some market issues and some issues within Xcel Energy with some of our linemen who didn't like them, we ended up switching now to penta treated poles.
Okay, and is it Mr. Schlander?
Mark Schlander. I'd just like to comment on the same issue. Sir, you asked if there is a different kind of pole. Yes, this is a new type of pole. They will like to say that they've used penta, but this is an entirely new type of process that they're using now. We're talking about an existing stock of their own figures, 85% northern hardwood red cedar in the field. Now they've switched to a cheaper softwood southern pine pole that's entirely pressure treated at high with steam for hours at high pressure, and the chemical mix is infused, and as you may have seen, it oozes even after it's installed. There's no wonder that 40 foot of radiation of these, not only the fuel oil, but the volatilized chemicals, the penta, the dioxin, that's what we're smelling. And that's why the complaints are here, and that's why we had, literally on a night where there was a blizzard on December 4th, we had over 35 to 40 people just in a small area come out to talk about these polls. And I would imagine if we had the time to go door to door along East and West River Parkway and other areas, they would not reveal where they've installed these polls. We would like to be able to talk to these neighbors that have not revealed that information. So, yes, there are many, many more complaints about these new polls.
Thank you. Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is really a bill where the rubber hits the road big time, and it would take way more time than we would have to talk about it here. So I do have three questions. I would just like to know, number one, where are the polls treated? What state? are they treated in? In Minnesota or somewhere down south?
Mr. Schrock?
I'm sorry, I could not tell you that. I did not know.
In Tennessee.
Thank you. Mr. Schreiner. Representative Taylor?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The second question is, what do you do with the waste poles?
The waste poles, there's essentially three options. You know, the pole will be brought back in and evaluated for structural integrity, and if it looks, if it passes, if it's fine, we'll go and reintroduce it back, put it in our stock, and reuse it. It can also be given away to farmers or utility or our workers. By a lot of those, or not by them, are given those, and just wanted to. There's a form, a waiver agreement that basically details the health issues and so forth associated with the pole, that they have to be cautious of and that it can't be just burned or turned into a landfill. So.
Okay. Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the answer. I just have one other question. You haven't found any problems with workers inhaling penta. Have you looked?
Mr. Schrock?
Have I looked? No, I have not looked.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And
clarification.
Slander?
The disposal issue is a severe one. If these chemicals were sitting outside, they enjoy a loophole on the disposal of the used poles. If the chemicals were sitting apart from the pole, they would be treated as hazardous waste. There is a loophole in federal regulations that allows these poles to be taken to a normal landfill. It's been estimated there's up to 40 pounds of chemical in each pole. That's a severe risk to all of us, and that loophole, if it were removed, could increase the disposal cost per pole to $10,000, it's been estimated. So if we're really charging the disposal costs the way we should for the hazardous material in these poles, it could cost up to $10,000 per pole, and that should change Xcel's practices if we really charged accordingly.
Okay. If I could just comment.
Yes, Representative Clark. I think Dr. Scott would like to say something.
Okay. He can do that right after I'm finished here. We're having an information hearing because we are really trying to get all the truth out. And I just talked with the Pollution Control Agency yesterday, and the disposal is one of the concerns. So we don't have them here with us today, but as we go forward with looking at this issue, it will be one of the issues that we will definitely address. I was told that 5 years ago there was another type of treated wood that was tripped and put in garden supply stores for people to take home, and it needed to be pulled back by the PCA because it was hazardous. These are, as has been testified here and in some of the documents you've got, sometimes, you know, people take these home and they're able to use for their gardens, for their yards, whatever. We need to look at this issue of disposal. It's a very serious part of what we have yet to uncover.
Thank you. And Dr. Scott, do you have a quick comment?
Madam Chair, just had a follow-up.
Is that his name? Excuse me. Okay.
My name is John Wilkinson. Okay. And having worked with the industry for a long time, out-of-service treated, penetrated poles are not hazardous waste. They can be disposed of in a landfill. In fact, California has looked at this in great detail, and they have allowed not only PENA but other poles to be out-of-service poles to be disposed of in that manner. The problem is that you fill up landfills with large pieces of wood that are preserved will last a long time. So there are other ways, reuse, recycle, there are other ways to use out-of-service kind of wood than making it a waste. And then lastly, you can incinerate or combust kind of treated wood in certified facilities, permitted facilities. There's one in Michigan. To help generate our cogen electricity. So,
okay, I think I'll move back to Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for your indulgence. I will say my first remark was this is where the rubber hits the road. And I don't want to say that this is only an issue about penta. Penta is nasty stuff. I will not go into that any further. However, I think that when we look at this issue further, we also have to look at the issue of we really do have to look at cost of power. We have to look at safety. We have to look at those issues. They're not inconsequential. They are very big pieces of this. And so while my line of questioning is about the Penta, there are many reservations I have there. I'm equally concerned about the safety of the people on the line. I'm equally concerned about what this is going to do in the long run. That's why it's way too much to get into here. I hope that you continue this discussion because it is not an all or one thing where it's just one side or the other. There are many big issues on both sides.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Wilkinson.
The Canadians have done a study on linemen exposed to perchlorophenol-treated wood. There's an industrial hygiene study which EPA got the results of that. It was Ontario Hydro that did the work back in the early 1990s. And it was a peer-reviewed study that and it showed no harm to the linemen working on the poles. There has been a lot of work done. And I'd hate to just get it filtered through one source to say what is available and what isn't, because there is a lot of work.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Wilkinson. Representative Clark?
With another
question. Yes, there are, and I think that in order to leave Representative Abler at 10 minutes, we will have three more minutes on this, and so next we have Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have about 27 questions, but I just wanted to get at the, I think the concern that I had was when the testifier from Excel said that when they ran out of the poles that they're using currently, when Hurricane Katrina happened, they used another pole and they stopped because the linemen were being burned and they weren't, you know, and they were inhaling the fumes. That goes to the crux of this issue around the integrity, to be quite frank with you, of the testifiers from Excel, that they've exposed their line workers to other poles that didn't go well. Now, I'm not sure what the final version will be on the Penta poles, other than it stinks in a community that's been seized with toxins over and over again. But I do think that it begs the question of what are the practices and what do we do for the benefit of the business side of it versus the health of the community. And by his own testimony, he suggested that they had used a product that didn't, I'm sorry, was the person from the, well, they used a product that was hurting the people who were setting it up. And so I think that raises the bar for me a lot, and that we should probably have a long conversation about this sooner than later.
All right. Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess there's a couple issues that I wanted to address. One is the smell. And I think it was Dr. Wilkinson that had testified that there is no smell for PCP. And yet the thing that initiated this study was the stench throughout the neighborhood. So are we talking about PCP and its inherent danger here, or are we talking about the solvents that are used to penetrate the wood to get into it? So we're going to have hearings on PCP and its dangers, and really what we're talking about here is a smell that, and I think that if I understood the testimonies correctly, that the Excel had offered to pull this pole out to investigate it and to find out why this was the exception to the rule. And then when they were, the response from the community was, no, we want to keep it here. And so what was the intent on keeping it there instead of ameliorating the problem? Is it just to generate more publicity on this issue? I guess...
Excuse me, Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Clark.
I really don't like having the integrity of my witnesses questioned. I would like to respond, Representative Stevenson, just to that part. This is not a publicity stunt. It's not just a matter of the smell. The testimony you've heard is about acute neurotoxin. And I wish you would look at this issue, you know, and understand that the people from Seward neighborhood, doesn't have to be a neighborhood I represent, but it's nearby, and Excel's promised to bring this to my neighborhood, which is one of the reasons that I'm concerned, and I think some of the other legislators are, and in fact, I hope you are concerned as they bring it to your neighborhood.
And Resident Susan, I think I recall from the testifier that first she was asked to pay for a new pole, and that held it back, and then pay for a different poll. You know, they went through a scenario of things. It wasn't just at all. I don't think what you were stating. So, would you like to follow up?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'm going back to the issue of is this a toxin? And we're getting conflicting testimony here. One of them is that gentleman on the right side here says it's a toxin. Gentleman on the left side says it's been through 270 studies through the EPA, and it's determined not to be
detrimental to health. Now, did I get that wrong?
No, you didn't. In fact, your toxicologist who testified that he pretty much said it was a dose that makes the poison for benachorphenol. It's a registered pesticide. If you get too much of a dose, it'll become a poison. At these levels of exposure, it's not a problem.
Okay, thank you. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And a follow-up to Representative Severson. I'm wondering, Mr. Schrock, and then I do have a question for Mr. Haney, too. Mr. Schrock, are you willing to take the poll out and look at what the anomalies may be about that poll and to make sure that the neighborhood would be present to know that the poll that you're taking out will go somewhere where you can look at what's causing the odor, and was it treated differently? Does it have different levels? Are you interested in looking at this original poll and seeing what the... Please let me finish. And to understand what the situation might be around this poll, if you can come to the microphone so we can get it on the tape.
Mr. Schrock, and we've already gone past the time I set, so let's try to be quick here.
I'm definitely interested in that myself. I have bosses who have bosses, and whether I can speak rectal energy on that topic, I'm not sure. But certainly that was one of my objectives, is to try to get that full tested.
Okay, Representative McNamara.
Madam Chair, thank you. And Mr. Schrock, you're here on behalf of Xcel, and if you were the wrong person to come, they should have sent somebody else. So I would anticipate that you're going to get the poll and get it checked out and see if there is something different about it, because the facts are the facts about the thing. Mr. Haney, I want to ask you, are you aware of your workers not having access to material data safety sheets in regards to any of the poll work?
No, I'm not aware of that.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Mr. Haney, are you concerned about the safety of your workers climbing untreated poles?
Climbing on
untreated poles. If we were to treat only the bottom of the pole and no longer treat the tops of the poles, and you'd have southern yellow pine untreated in the neighborhood, is there a potential that your workers will be concerned about their safety of climbing untreated poles and the integrity of those poles and transformers hanging on them?
Madam Chair, Representative, if you ask if there's a potential they'd be concerned, of course.
Okay.
There's always
a
potential, but I'm not aware of any particular concern related to an untreated pole.
I
would assume that the quality control would dictate that they would have to be structurally sound.
All right, thank you. And Mr. Representative Rosenthal, Representative Howes, and then we should be done.
I'll be very brief, Madam Chair. In fact, your question, Representative Bly's answered mine, and that was really having to do with the difference between the hardwood and the red cedar versus the softer yellow pine and the amount of toxin that the yellow pine has to be exposed to compared to the harder wood. And why was that change made? And it seems to me that these things are occurring with the softer woods.
Just to reiterate, this is a totally different poll. I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Mark Suwinder speaking. This is an entirely different kind of poll. It's only been put into use recently. You have an entirely different type of wood, solid northern red cedar. 85% of the poles in the field for Xcel right now are hardwood poles. Now, to save money, and we've been told by several Xcel officials prior to this meeting that it was to save money. And these poles are different because they're not only softwood, but they are being treated at high pressure with steam for hours. And when they come out, they're oozing. And when they're in our neighborhood, they're oozing. And it's not only the air, it's the runoff every time it rains and snows. This is being tracked up and down our alleys, our streets, into our driveways, our sidewalks, and into our homes. And the dust, when it dries, blows into our windows.
All right, thank you. And Representative Howes.
Well, Madam Chair, I think we should get on to Representative Abler, but I think we could solve this and help Xcel save $10,000 a pole that they would have to get rid of by making the city of Minneapolis, or making Xcel put all their wires in Minneapolis underground. Then we now SEIU might have a problem with that, but I think the 49ers would love it.
Thank you, Representative Clark.
Thank you, Representative. I'm going to have to make you an author on my other bill. I want to thank the committee for all of its time. This is an issue that is emerging, and you're some of the first to hear about it, and I really do appreciate you taking the time. I just do want to say one final thing. One of the reasons I took this so seriously is that PENTA is banned already in 26 countries around the world. You know, this is a serious issue. It's not anything just to play around with. So I'd like to give up my seat here to Representative Abler and thank the committee. We will be back to talk more about this at another time. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Clark, and thank you to all the testifiers and the members for a good conversation. Representative Abler.
Madam Chair, there's plenty of time left. So this is a short bill. If someone could please move the bill for me.
Yes. Representative Morgan?
I'd be happy to move the bill. I'm just not sure where I'm moving it.
For possible inclusion in your
omnibus. For possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, Madam Chair.
And Madam Chair, if he also could move to delete the policy parts of this, and maybe after our testimony, because it's just to make it clean for you. It's only the fee reduction we're after here. The policy has been dealt with elsewhere and is immaterial. It just makes it cleaner for the committee. And after we do our short testimony, maybe Ms. Cleveland could tell us what amendment that might be. I didn't give her heads up about that. But
okay, right, but Morgan hard, makes so. That motion.
Well, afterwards.
Okay, after.
Madam Chair and members, this is compared to the last bill, I think you all like this one. Nobody was harmed in the preparation of this or will be harmed. This is a bill to help social workers pay less money for their registration fees. And just to make it quicker, I'll let my witness describe it to you in about a minute, and then we can go back into the amendment.
Please state your name for the record.
Yes. My name is Kate Bactisate. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Social Work. And good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I have testified before this committee in early February, sort of as an informational report based on the governor's budget proposal. And so I will be very brief in my testimony. I do also just want to thank Representative Abler, Tao, and Hosh for sponsoring the bill for the Board of Social Work. Very important to us. The bill, again, is non-controversial and definitely supported by stakeholder groups. And the materials that were provided to you, one that I might draw your attention to, is a fiscal note that I was required to prepare for the Senate hearing, which occurred yesterday in Senator Berglund's committee. They did vote unanimously on the fee reduction portion and approved that. And again, just to be very brief, the key point, the Board of Social Work is not a general fund agency. All of our revenues are derived exclusively from fees. They're maintained in the Special Revenue Fund. The proposal before you is to maintain the current licensing fee rate and ask for an additional 10% reduction to that. The proposals approved by the governor, included in the governor's budget bill, and this fee reduction, we are asking for a permanent fee reduction, which was directed to do that by Minnesota Management and Budget based on Minnesota Statute 16A, requiring the boards to reevaluate fees every 2 years in planning biennial budgets. And our last fee increase was in 2001. And we are hoping that this will be approved. We've been able to keep our fees down. And I guess just in conclusion, you know, as you're looking at that fiscal note, you will see that this will be a reduction in $351,000, which really does make sense. It is the goal, our board's goal, to be fiscally responsible. Our appropriations are $921,000 for fiscal years 10 and 11 without this fee decrease. Without this approval, the estimated revenues would be $1,300,000, which is certainly in excess of our spending authority. And with this fee reduction, the anticipated revenues are approximately $959,000, which is much more close to our appropriation. And our goal is to balance expenditures and revenues as we are required to do so by state law. Even with these reduced revenues, the board will still be able to maintain its duties related to providing public protection. So I certainly would hope that you would support House File 1366. I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions, members? Okay, with that, Ms. Representative Morgan.
Yes, I'll move, per the author's request, deletion of Articles 1 and 2.
All right. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion
carries.
Madam Chair, just a closing thought. It's really nice to see a board come to the right thing. And the history of the social work board, they've had some rocky times and some surcharges, which have been very challenging for some of their members. And the last two EDs, including the new one, things have really turned around. They're doing wonderful work serving their licensees well. And it's nice they can come forward with this proposal at this time.
All right. Thank you. Any other comments, members? All right. With that, Representative Morgan renews his motion to lay over the bill for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill as amended. And we vote on that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Abler.
Thank you very much for your support.
Thank you. And with that, we have minutes. Representative Rosenthal, have you looked at the minutes? Would you like to move them?
I have, Madam Chair, and I would like to.
All right. All in favor of the motion approve the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion prevails. Any opposed? No? Okay, motion prevails. Amendments are approved. And meeting is adjourned.